Hi, and welcome to the Dark Web Vlogs, where I'm sharing the experiences I've had working with clients on some of the most outrageous deals being run over the dark web. The super scary or unexplained and pretty much all the unbelievable are for movies and books and things, right? They don't really happen to us or our neighbor. But when it does happen to you, well, that changes much more than just what you know. It changes who you are. What if the events in one single day hit you in a way that you couldn't even explain? If you didn't go insane as humans, you'd want to feel normal again and would want answers. Answers that would provide an understanding that would help take away maybe the fear or confusion that has found us. They call me the Ghost. I'm ex-CIA and now a dark operative on the dark web. I've worked a lot of jobs, and today is my account of a place where powers beyond us have taken hold, and the time has come for some of those answers. Take a listen and enjoy. As I said in my preview to the sharing of this job, really most often, big things seem to happen to big people, or that's when we take notice. The rich guy who wanted something no one else could get. The wealthy woman who wants to win a war with an ex. Of course, those of big science. Well, they just bring big everything, including their issues and the nature of their requests. And it's true. I'm oftentimes found by those people. But there are jobs where big money, big people, they're not involved. And in fact, any sort of money or exchange, for that matter, isn't even considered. This is because others of the chosen or not chosen simple life are not immune. Why would they be? Does strange have a preference? I think not. Those big people oftentimes choose their battles. But for a force coming for you, they're coming, no matter who you are. When this request came to me, my team, we were still on one of those big jobs. It was a little unusual the way this request came in, and I could tell right off the bat that this person was not all that familiar with how maybe to use a computer or how people communicate electronically. And I mean, it's true that usually the people that come to me are in some sort of circle where this experience is there. So this kind of request always stands out to me. And just so you know, it doesn't stand out to me in a bad way. When I notice it, I put special attention on it because I know this must be a bit of a reach for them to be contacting me in the first place. Anyway, it's later one night, and I'm in a standby position on the job I'm currently on, and I take a moment to look into what it all is. It's coming to me from, I'll just leave it as New England. The sharing of this job is not really to attract people to this location. I mean, you've seen that before, right? You mention one thing about a certain place that seems even remotely interesting, and then thousands of people suddenly just have to know and flock to the area. Well, we don't want that to happen here, and with good reason. And either way, it's not New England that is anything really to notice. It's who it's from. The requester says he's a ranger, a forest ranger, and he tells me in the request that he has a problem in the territory that he has been managing for the last 25 years. At least he's been involved with it. He explains that when he came in, he was a younger man. There were those above him, and things happened, things he didn't understand, but they came and they went. Eventually, it all got passed down to him, and he began to understand. There's more to being a forest ranger in the United States, anyway, than people might realize. Known as a warden in other parts of the world, like Ireland and the United Kingdom, I'm sure other things in other places, but they are the keepers. The park warden or ranger protects what's there, the environment, the life, the history. They preserve. In the request, he doesn't really go too deep, but I know enough and can see enough that just in what he writes to me, he knows more, he thinks more about what this all is. What he does say is that there has been a disturbance. He tells me that things are not right in the peaceful balance that it should be, that he needs help dealing with whatever is causing his guests, because that's how he sees them, to leave before their set time to go. And they are leaving upset and in a hurry, and he says that the peaceful little world that he works so hard to maintain has been disrupted. He wants to get it under control. He's a rational man and is very clear that this could very well be, you know, a criminal. He knows this. He says that he's well aware of what comes to the forest. Families, couples, loners, those seeking that peace that he knows the forest offers. But then there are those that also come for what it offers, only for the wrong reasons. Not to get away, to be one with what nature gives, but to use nature for what it can do, which is to provide cover. Could this be a situation where there's someone they need to catch, shut down? Sure, it could. But he isn't all that sure and isn't really solid with that idea. He doesn't go into much more detail and simply asks if I will please come by so he can better explain the circumstances. Now, this type of request I'd call genuine. And don't get me wrong, all of the requests that I receive are genuine. What I mean by that is that the victim or requester is basically on the innocent side of things. You know, is there nothing they've done wrong? Well, that's not always the case, but they did not generate the problem. I do not feel that whatever this issue is, that it was self-created or that the ranger put it upon himself, by himself. As the job we're on comes to an end, we take some time to, as a team, go through this request. The ranger, who I'll call Ranger Jensen, seems honest, yet a bit timid to go into too much detail. Most of the time when I receive a request, it is from someone a little bit more, you know, high profile. Finding information on them as we do our background checks is still difficult, but at least there's a lot to work with. There's a lot to find. For Ranger Jensen, his life has been simple. He's been living it the same way for many years. We go back very far to before he even became a forest ranger, and we dig into everything we can. Even from what Harley can dig up, there really isn't much to the man, other than he followed in his father's footsteps and took to the side of nature as a career. Finished high school, never went to college, and pretty much moved around a little bit and then got right into it. He's been doing it ever since. Been a ranger in that forest for 25 years, or a version of. He didn't need much, and he actually preferred to kind of be a loner. However, he loved the animals and things in the forest and took pride in the type of guests that his forest attracted. He likes to get to know them, have small chats with them as they arrive. It's almost as if he took the forest to be his, and anyone that came to stay there was his guest, all with good intentions, and it was rare that he really did have any issues. He enjoyed everything about his life. There was no reason for me to think that this man was simply lonely or looking for attention or diversion, and it's how he conducted himself. There was no reason to think he was going mad either. When the team and I leave the job we're on, we split up, and Frankie and I go to where Ranger Jensen is, and the rest of my team heads home, and they're going to wait until the results of this first meeting come out. Going into the forest and pretty much into the middle of nowhere, I don't want to go alone. So when Frankie and I get into the nearest town to our destination, we stock up on some supplies, and then we head on in. Most of the forest is only accessible by foot or mountain bike, but Ranger Jensen has a small cabin, and there's a one-lane gravel road that will get you there. As we drive, we see a mix of greens and browns. The trees are lush, mixed in the logs and fallen branches. When we get to the cabin and get out, we can really take it all in. I mean, it smells like pine, very earthy. You can hear the sounds of birds and insects and the rustling of animals in the underbrush. It's still daytime when we get there. I lifted my face to the sun and could feel both that sunlight and the shadows on my skin. I mean, this guy lives here. It almost can't get more simple and serene than it is. We aren't out of the truck for more than a couple of minutes when Ranger Jensen comes outside to meet us. He looked a bit aged, I'd say maybe in his 50s, but more really rough from the outdoors than anything else. You could definitely see that he'd done his share of hauling logs or whatever he's doing because he was in very good shape. And he came out all smiles, Very friendly, he took off his hat to greet me, introduced himself to both Frankie and I, and after we got done with all of that, he invites us inside to his little cabin. And I mean, it's easy to see right away that this man has made this cabin his home. It's a little rough around the edges, but also it's surprisingly homey. It's almost as if there's been a woman's touch at some point. He's got what you can tell are handmade blankets over a couch. He has a wooden clock, a small kitchen that's decorated in blue and white checkered accents. I mean, this would be a great place to stay, you know, for a weekend. But this was his home. He lives here all of the time. He offers us some coffee, you know, my favorite thing, so I definitely take him up on that. And we sit down in his little living room area, and he starts to explain a little bit more about what's been going on. He tells us that it started about 2 weeks ago. A family that was camping rushed his cabin pleading for help. They had made it back to their SUV and said they drove straight to the cabin. They were panicked and they were afraid. They were too afraid to go back into the forest to get their things, and they were looking for help. Well, Ranger Jensen, of course, obliged. The mother and two children were way too afraid to help Jensen any further, but the father offered willingly to go back to the campground to get their things. In the truck with Jensen, he was actually more apologetic than anything else. He said he was sorry to intrude and that really everything was fine, more than fine. It's what he said next that really caught Ranger Jensen's attention. He told the ranger that he felt happy. Unlike his wife and children who were in a rush to get out of there, it was almost like the father was rejuvenated and motivated. Well, it went very quickly. Ranger Jensen helped him get everything together, and once back, the family left. And the whole thing left Ranger Jensen with this uneasy feeling. But then again, you know, he thought people experience the forest in different ways. Many people tell stories and scare themselves right out of it. Some people have nightmares and imagine different sounds and things that are coming after them. Sometimes it's just the open space that almost has a reverse claustrophobic effect, and they somehow feel the need to get back to their protective city walls. Anyway, the whole thing went very quickly. He got their things put together, helped the father get everything back to the cabin, and the family left. The ranger said he wasn't going to overthink it, at least he didn't want to. There could be a lot of reasons why someone was afraid of the forest. If you're not used to it, it can get to you. But then he said more things started happening. A few days later, a young man came to him and said that his fiancée was missing. She left in the morning to take a pretty common trail to go on her morning jog, something she did every day. There was nothing unusual about it except for the fact that it usually takes her about 40 minutes, and at this point she'd been gone about 6 hours. The young man did not know where to go for help, but because the ranger, you know, meets and greets his guests, the young man knew where to find him. When they went back to their campsite, everything did seem in order. It's like the young man said, all they had really taken out so far was their small stove. Jensen could see that they had started coffee. The tent was open. You could see in there also they had just gotten up. The young man was talking fast and visibly shaken. Jensen did his best, he said, to calm the young man down, assuring him that, as the ranger of these parts, he always had a good eye on what was going on, and he had not seen anything suspicious or anyone that he felt shouldn't be there. He suggested that maybe his fiancée just wanted some peace and quiet down by the river. Maybe she was just taking a rest. I mean, depending on where she went, she could have found many things. But the young man just said no, that she was going to be right back, like she always was, and he was sure something was wrong. But right then, as they're discussing these things, the fiancée walks up. She's young, fit, and she's a petite woman, and she was all smiles. To Jensen, it looked like everything was fine. I mean, she fell into her fiancé's arms and told him over and over again how much she loved him. And then she started getting into even more personal things, like how she no longer wanted to postpone the wedding, how she didn't want to wait to have children. And these were all things that Jensen didn't feel he needed to be there for, so he politely excused himself and let the young woman handle it from there. That young couple was set to be in their campsite for a week, or so they said when they arrived, but when Jensen went back to check on them the next day, they were gone. There was no trace of them. They picked up, took everything, and took off. It wasn't until a few days later that Jensen's idea of these two young crazy kids in love changed a bit. He started making a connection between them and the family that also had issues. One side was panicked, and the other side was overly happy or peaceful or joyful or something. Ranger Jensen told Frankie and I that there were a few more incidents that were similar to the family and the engaged couple, and it was almost like he could go on forever explaining these things, but there had to be a point. And Frankie and I, you know, we're starting to get restless because we know that there's something to all of this, but it's almost as if Ranger Jensen is uncomfortable moving into the exact topic. After we've listened to enough, I try to take a little bit more control of where this meeting's headed. And I tell him that we understand what he's saying and that yes, these incidents are very similar, but there is something more. And we know that. We can see that. Both Frankie and I can see that something is making him very uncomfortable. So we need him to get to the point and basically spill the beans. I mean, what else does he know about all of this? People seem to be coming back fine and they seem to be fine with each other. So is that why he hasn't called the regular authorities or anything on what this is or what is it? He gets up, pours himself another cup of coffee, and then comes back, sets it down on the coffee table, takes a seat across from Frankie and I, and then leans down on his knees and folds his hands together, looks first to me, then to Frankie, and then he looks down to where his mug is. He tells us that he has called on us specifically because he does not feel this is something the authorities could handle or could even understand, much less believe. He says the forest has been good to him and he wouldn't trade his years for anything. But even though things, for the most part, have gone smooth and the forest is even better today than it was when he arrived, there's something special about it. He takes a sip of his coffee and very slowly sets that mug back down and then asks us if we've heard of the legend of Jonathan Greater or if we've ever heard of the man Jonathan T. Greater. Well, Frankie and I look at each other and no, we haven't heard of this person. Ranger Jensen gets up now and takes a deep breath, adjusts himself a bit, and starts to explain. He says that Jonathan Greater came over from Europe to make his home here in the United States with his family, back when the migrants were coming and the big dream of freedom was alive. He was an Englishman and a trapper by trade, a fur trapper. He belonged in the forest and he made his home there, and things were going fine for the family for a while. He settled into a quiet life with little contact with those in town, but when they did go, they were welcomed with smiles and open arms. The town was a mixed batch of transplants, and everyone helped one another and tried to get along. Over time, though, Trapper John didn't really bring his family around much, and although the townsfolk were still as friendly and helpful as ever, stories say that he was more distant, wanted to keep to himself. That family missed the tree lighting in town that Christmas with no real explanation. They didn't attend the festival in the spring, and when it came harvest time for much of the town in the fall, they were absent for those events as well. The people knew they were still there because they came around every once in a while for supplies, but the little English family that everyone loved so much became almost unapproachable. They were different. Even when the other kids would want to play with the greater children, they seemed uninterested or, as some saw it, held back. And over time, townspeople pretty much all agreed that Jonathan Greater was the reason, and that he positioned himself as more of an outcast at that point. He was unfriendly, and although they would still welcome him in their town, they would be keeping an eye on him while he was there. There was something odd that was growing in Jonathan the longer he was there. He still sold his furs, but towards the end, he was just getting stranger with every time he came around, and the people felt it. They wanted to be cautious. Things only got worse, much worse, and towards the end he didn't even allow his family to go to town. They were to stay home at all times and do as they were told. And one evening it was all too much for him. Crazy had taken over, and Trapper John lost it. Did in his whole family one night, took them out back and took them out one by one, his wife last. He then put them in the small barn/workshop that he had, where he prepped his furs and pelts. What he didn't know, however, was that earlier that day, his wife had reached out for help, sent her oldest into town with a letter to be given to the seamstress she'd befriended when she arrived, and who she hung out with now and again, when they were still new. The message asked for help. She was scared for herself and her children, and said that her husband would never let them go. They were basically hostages in their own home. She thought her husband was sick and going mad and sinking into a depression as well. She didn't know what it was, but he was going crazy and was no longer rational. Instead, he was completely paranoid and delusional at times. Because of his paranoia, he became upset about their move, But the wife always saw it as a good thing. In her letter, she talked about how it was something positive for the family. They made the choice together. The education was better. The people were friendly. It was an exciting place to be in exciting times, and she was happy. So were her children. And mind you, those things were the very things that Jonathan loved as well in the beginning. But then it was as if he hated it. All of it. Well, after he wiped out his family, something happened and he flipped again without explanation. He apparently looked all around and seeing the horror he created, it snapped him out of his delirium, and instead of being angry and paranoid, he was devastated at the magnitude of what he had done. It all hit him at once, hit him right in the face, hard and late at night, under the moonlight. Now, all alone, he went into shock. The next morning, early, as a few of the men from town approached the cabin, because, of course, now they were on their way after receiving that letter, they could hear his cries. They were the cries of loss, desperate cries and screams. As the men approach from the trees, they see Jonathan, kneeling on the ground facing them in front of his work shed, covered in blood and worn from the mess he created. He had a look of complete sorrow on his face, which was now full of tears. He was broken from the realization of what he had done. He cried out that he did it, and that he was sorry, and that he's been ill, but it's too late, and no one can help him now. The men just stopped. I mean, they had to assess the situation. Was he still dangerous? It was clear something happened there. It was not good. And then, as the men looked on, Jonathan Grader made a vow. He claimed he now did not deserve to go to the heavens and that he would take his punishment. He vowed to help others who might lose their way. Life is precious, he said. He knew this back in England, and he knows it again. It's too late for him now. But he vowed to do what he could to ensure that this did not happen again to someone else. He cried out that choices come with regrets, and that we worry too much. The pressure was too great for him, when all along he had it so good. But he couldn't see it. He lost his mind over it. He called out that it was all a sin against life to not appreciate, and that people need their eyes opened. And then, in an instant, too quick for anyone to do anything about it, Trapper John took his own life. According to those men, his last words were that people need to know. Well, the men slowly approached the horrific scene, and they were just wrecked by what they found. It would take a while for anyone to even be able to make any sense of it. The story of that night spread and has lived on, and over time, it became legend that Trapper John, Jonathan Grader, would return on the day of his death every 10 years to help those that he can. But what Ranger Jensen wants to know is, what did Trapper John mean by that? Because he's seeing a lot of fear in people running out of the forest, trying to get away. Well, for a moment, both Frankie and I are a little bit stunned. And it was really how Ranger Jensen explained it all. It was with a lot of passion. And it was obvious to us that the legend of Jonathan Grader was very much alive, and people in these parts definitely knew all about how Trapper John went crazy back in the day. But I had questions. Did something happen 10 years ago? And there have been a lot of 10 years since this all went down. Were the events that happened, if they did, very similar to what's happening now? And I mean, how long does he stay if Grader does come? We really did need more information. Okay, so we're looking for more answers, and we learned that although there's only Jensen now, even just 10 years ago, there was the head ranger who held the main post for many years, a guy they called Gunner. He was still there. The guy was tough. He won pretty much every shooting competition in the area and held that high position for many years, until he just got too old for it all. But anyway, that guy was tough and stubborn, Ranger Jensen tells us, and when there was big trouble, Gunner seemed to like to handle those things on his own. Not that Jensen didn't get wind of some of it, but it would take years for him to put it all together and learn about what the legend even was. Jensen, unlike most of the people in the area still today, he wasn't from that area originally, so he had to put things together based on what he heard and what people told him. These days, though, I mean, he's considered a local. He knew pretty much everything and everybody. He's very well liked. The answer to my question, though, was yes. He remembers the people needing help. They wanted out, and he remembers Gunner helping one family, and the woman reminded him so much of the father of that family that came to him. That woman back then was in some sort of daze. She was crazy with energy and happiness. She couldn't stop hugging her children and her husband, who was completely overwhelmed, and he thought his wife was crazy. And these types of things did happen, but it only lasted just over a month or so. And then everything calmed down and went back to normal. I mean, Gunner always had it under control when this was going on, and so Jensen didn't really worry about it too much. Until now, when he can look back on it all and know that something is up. He says he was able to start putting it all together. He'd overhear Gunner and some of his old friends telling stories, but really back then, he thought it was just, you know, old guys telling stories, probably really to scare Jensen, and he just left it at that. But then others in town confirmed the legend. They fully believed it. So, you know, here we are, Frankie and I, and I'm listening, and, you know, we have a legend. Now, either this is true and it's an exceptional phenomenon happening here, or if nothing else, we could end up proving it to be something else and at least have the opportunity to calm the nerves of the town and free them of what they believe is a curse on this place, a place they love but have come to fear as well. I look at Frankie and I can easily see that he's going to agree with me, and I accept the job. This whole thing has been going on for years and it's time for some sort of resolve. So for this job, I already have Frankie with me, but then I call in Ryder and Harley as well. If you remember, or maybe if you haven't listened to the vlogs on my team yet and how they came to join my team in the first place, but Ryder was the one who was on track to be a medical examiner. She became a bit of an expert then in the afterlife as things went. And so I want her on this job with me because if Jensen is right, the afterlife is exactly what we're going to be dealing with here. And then Harley has a PhD in psychology. And if this turns out not to be true and people are just sort of losing their minds all around in this place, then we want someone who would know and could maybe help. Not to mention the fact that if people do get affected by what's in this forest, I'd like her to be there to keep us grounded. When the rest of the team gets there, we all have dinner with Jensen. We're getting to know each other so that we can establish, you know, a comfortable relationship, which we will need for this. But we also break out the items that I've asked Ryder and Harley to bring, along with some other special items that Ryder can possibly use to call in or communicate with the dead. We also discuss our goal. Our goal here is to stop any menacing that might be going on by this spirit. In this case, obviously, that menacing spirit would be Jonathan Grader. Can we stop him from upsetting the people coming to Jensen's Forest? I mean, all those people are doing are looking for a place, trying to find some time with nature, time to relax and be at peace. If we can stop Grader from disturbing that peace, that is what Jensen's looking for ultimately. However, that said, we really need to understand more about what this spirit is up to in the first place. And that means we need to try to find people that have been affected and learn about their experience and what it did to them. And finally, if it all leads in the direction of the legend of Jonathan Grader, then we need to do something about it. And that's where Ryder can really help. She shares with us a bit of her expertise and what could all be involved here. She does this so that really Jensen can know more about her and what she does, but also for all of us so we can know what to expect. We're not just going to be able to run into the forest with candles and things and banish the guy, tell him that he's unwelcome and scream at him until he leaves. As Ryder puts it, it's a fragile situation, and usually it's just not that simple. And she explains, spirits can get lost or even stuck in a place where they have nowhere to go. They get confused and in turn confuse us, which can manifest as fear, a very common reaction to things we don't understand. You know, we feel threatened and not in control. But if there is a spirit at work, a person with experience in this type of thing can work to help the spirit find their rightful place within the spiritual world where they belong, instead of being stuck here among those still in the physical form. Again, before any of that can happen, though, you really need to understand the nature of the disturbance and what it really means. You would be working not only to rid the living of the invasion, you would also be taking on the very heavy task of helping the spirit find their home. Each case can be quite complex and needs to be analyzed. You want to understand and know before you go, before you can either reason with them and get them to move on, or attempt to send them into the light. It was a great dinner. We established a trust at that dinner. Ranger Jensen is not our typical client, if not for the big and glaring point that he is not a computer literate. How did he even find me? Well, we dig and he gives it up and tells us that he went to the only person he knew he could trust with this. He went to the sheriff. And this too is a risk for Jensen because even though they were technically respectable friends, he didn't want to look crazy. But it was also very smart because the last thing the sheriff needed was unsolved issues in the forest and people fearing there was some sort of criminal or group of evildoers tormenting the town and its visitors. The sheriff is more connected, and he knew one of the judges in the nearest big town. It was through that judge that Jensen was able to get in contact with me. The ranger even made a trip to the big city and everything just to make this all happen. And if you've ever met a guy like Jensen, you know this is really a big deal. Bright lights in the big city are not exactly their thing, and it can be extremely intimidating. But he did it, and I respect him for it. He was not lacking in guts or nerve, that's for sure. And this was just another way he proved that. So after our dinner and laying things out, it was on to our interviews. As far as getting those interviews with recent victims, Ranger Jensen tells us the family he told us about was from somewhere else. But that young couple that are engaged, they are from the small town that he would consider himself from at this point. And there were a couple of other stories as well that he shared that night we had dinner that were from locals. One was a group of teenagers that Jensen knows. And hey, he knew it. They were there to get away from their parents and party. But one of them got a lot more than that. And then there was another middle-aged man that came to just camp by himself. Happens more often than people realize for whatever their reasons, but this guy was found by Ranger Jensen down by the river, just laying there, giggling and almost seemed amazed by something, staring at the sky. All Jensen did there was snap the guy out of whatever he was doing, and then the guy sprung up and practically ran off to his site and packed up everything and took off. So the stories did all have similarities. Someone seems to be affected, in awe, or overly excited to get out of there. But if there is anyone else with that person, they are the ones that are scared to death, and they're panicking. And for that, they want to get out of there. Hard to understand, and that's where we will start, to try to get some sort of understanding around what's going on here. We know that we don't have a ton of time. We don't actually even know how long Grater will be here, if he is. That's something Jensen doesn't know for sure. So we had to split up. Harley goes out on interviews. She is our best resource for this because with her background, she can best determine if these people have somehow lost their minds or if what they have to say is actually credible. So while Harley goes out to interview and get some information, Frankie, Ryder, and I get ready to head out into the forest. Ranger Jensen will stay with us on and off, but he does have a job to do, people to check in on, and things like that. So it's not like he can just be with us the entire time. But he shows us the areas where people have been affected, in case that provides some sort of explanation. And then with Jensen off taking care of his duties, Ryder gets to work. She works to connect with the Jonathan Grater, and she does this all through her mind while sitting among the graves of his family. And I mean, the idea here was simple. She would call him out, call him to us so that he could connect and try to find out more about what his situation was. The more we get into the evening and as darkness and night fell upon us, she does make the connection. So Ryder's by the graves and we're sort of on the outskirts. You know, we're there, but we're trying to stay out of the way while she does what she does and we're trying to observe at the same time. We're there for a while and we don't want to use any sort of lights or flashlights or headlamps or anything. You know, we stay still. We don't want anything to disturb what she is doing. And in the end, she was successful. I mean, of course she was. And not only did she make a connection, she drew him to us as well. The rest of us, that being Frankie and I. And I turned out to be the lucky target. Yep, me. And this was definitely one of the strangest things that has ever happened to me. So I'm sitting there by Frankie. Harley's obviously not there, and Ryder's doing her thing. And then that's where I lose track of things. But going by what Frankie says, I apparently excused myself, which right there isn't normal. I would never excuse myself from an observation like that, but I did. And Frankie's now watching Ryder and me. And so, okay, I excuse myself and just sort of trot off into the woods. Well, that's how Frankie put it. I actually have no memory of it. Frankie says it was only a few minutes after that, and Ryder starts looking around like she's lost something. She's moving fast and looking all around. Turns out she has lost her connection to Greater. So that happens, and then I'm gone the rest of the night. And no, they did not come after me. Ryder was in deep enough to know that she lost Greater because he had found me. So she knew I would come back, and she could feel that I was not in danger. Before Frankie had a total fit and came after me, she was able to hold him back, get him to the cabin, and explain it to both Frankie and Ranger Jensen. Although she didn't have a complete handle on all that he was doing, she knew that I was not in danger. She knew it was right and that they should just wait. Well, waiting for me to return, as it would be for anyone on our team, meant Frankie took post on the front porch, did not sleep, and kept a lookout for me until I did return. To keep it simple, we were all staying there at the cabin, had sleeping bags and equipment in the living room, so that's where our base was. And that is where I would eventually come back to. And so I do come back, and I was like how Jensen described about so many people. I mean, not the panicked, ready to run person, but the strangely calm and excited person. That's what I was. I hugged Frankie and Ryder harder than ever. I missed Scarlett and Jagger and Harley like crazy. And I was partly in tears, partly laughing, and I was very hyped up. I wanted to get something done. Not in an hour, not even in a few minutes. I mean, I was ready to go right then. I could feel the exhilaration, and I couldn't even control it. That I do remember. And then after some time reacquainting myself with the actual world I do live in, I was able to start to recall what the heck happened. And I mean, I could never have enough time in this vlog to explain to you what all happened, and that's because what happened was that I was gone from my team, but I was off. I was gone from my life. I was living an entire other life, a different life from what I have now, and I lived it until I was old. It was a life without my team. You know, what would that be like? What if I would have stayed at the CIA? That was what it was about. It was a journey to address any regret or question about your life. That's what he was doing. Now, to be clear, I would never think that leaving the CIA was a bad choice, but I will wonder, you know, I do wonder at times what it would have been like if I would have stayed. Ryder pulled Grady to us, and each one of us might have had a moment in time where we made that decision, where we could have made the decision not to be on this team. But for some reason, Grady got to me. Well, the more and more I came to, the more clear it all was to me. Grady was trying to help. As he said, quote, to help those he can. And it was an epiphany. He showed me that my life choice was good. If I ever didn't appreciate what I have and what I'm doing, it told me that I should. Because what he showed me as my alternative, the years where my life could have gone, aside from being dull by my standards, I couldn't have made the difference I am now. I would have been full of regrets. And then as I'm coming to, basically, and realizing what just happened, Harley returns, and she's extremely interested in what happened to me once she learns about my disappearance. I tell her about the years, what I saw growing old and looking back. It was truly amazing. You come out of something like that, and like the people Jensen saw that were not in a panic and full of fear, those directly affected, I was full of motivation that went beyond the crazy motivation I already have. It reiterated to me that I have made a good choice. Harley listens, and then she comes back with the same type of information. Each person she talked to was shown the alternative. for every regret or hesitation, the experience that their instincts were correct and their lives were okay, more than okay, and that they should appreciate what they have. The lone man camping alone, he did not need to take his own life like he came to the forest to do. He was okay, and his life was actually great. He had just become overwhelmed and couldn't see it. The fiance, unsure about marrying the man she loves, now knows she can. The stories were all the same, and it's not like this would work for everyone. I mean, there are things that we go through that do need change. But with what it would appear, Jonathan Grader knew who to target and wants to get across to those where it matters that in their situation, they should feel good and not waste time on regrets or fears that might make them crazy like it did him. So there's me, and I'm still feeling very affected. To me, I just lived an entire life in a few hours, and now just got back to start over. I cannot and will not ever be able to fully explain that. Harley found the same, though, or similar stories. Sure, it scared the people who didn't understand and just cared about their loved ones, but once it all came out, everyone was better off. Less fears, less fighting, and more confidence, and more doing. The next night, Ryder is ready to take it further, and she wants Ranger Jensen there this time. Clearly, the graves are where Grader likes to be when he's visiting this world, and so we go there again. Ryder sets herself up, and like before, the rest of us stay on the outskirts. And I have to say, to watch this connection was literally watching a miracle unfold right before your eyes. Really. Now, remember, this spirit has been in limbo for years. His incident took place in the early 1900s. Ryder's doing her thing, and suddenly Grader becomes visible to us. But Ryder can see him better than we can. She tells us that she sees he is weak, and he looks tired. And I mean, we can see it a bit too, but it's kind of hard to explain. He wasn't really a person there. He was a spirit with the liking of a man that you could make out if you really looked. But there he was, kneeling down in front of his wife's gravestone, with one hand over his eyes and the other on his wife's gravestone. And I just remember his weeping. It didn't really echo, but it's like the sounds were all around you. It's not like it came from one place or direction. It was just everywhere. Jonathan Grader, Trapper John, became real to all of us in that moment, and it was sad. He was sobbing and saying he was sorry over and over again. He was saying things like he's making it better and he's working hard to help others, and how he hoped she would be proud. But then he would cry because he missed her, and as he rambled, he talked about how it was. Ryder was a connection, a real one, not a target, maybe even a friend, and he kept talking. He said that by refusing to move on, he would never get to her, but that he felt this was something he had to do. And I have to say, this was one of Ryder's stellar moments. And again, if you haven't heard the vlogs on the team, take a listen to Ryder. And remember, our original goal was to get this all to stop. But when, you know, and even Jensen agreed, this all was going down, the concept of what it is was changing. Mr. Jonathan Grader, the legend, is not actually hurting anyone. He's helping them along, helping them through that crazy emotion of fear. It is helpful and healthy at times, don't get me wrong. But it's also a scapegoat. It can be an out, an excuse. It's easier. We've all had those moments, right? So that left us with a choice. Or rather, it turned out, it left Grader with a choice. He connected with Ryder and he felt safe. He had already taken me on a journey and I couldn't deny his influence. He was one of us that night, the team and Ranger Jensen. He was sitting there, almost in shock, by the way, but he did keep quiet and he just watched. Ryder explained to Grader that he had a choice. His chosen duties were done, or could be. He had chosen his own penance and no longer needed to be punished at this point. I mean, now he was only punishing himself. She told him how he could be on the side of the light, and that he chose to work for many, many years to make up for what he had done. Hindsight is perfect, they say, and Grader obviously experienced this, and it would seem he saved many people from making mistakes because of what he had learned. Makes you wonder if we, here now, would go to those lengths. I mean, we've all made mistakes. But would you do what it took to help your good friend from making those same ones? Well, some would, and some would not. In the end, it was no longer Ranger Jensen's goal. This man, Grader, he was in torment, and we now understood the real decision was his. You cannot force a spirit like that. He has to feel clear. And so we waited. Grader was overtaken by guilt, but Ryder kept working. She told him how proud his wife must be, and that she loved him then, and that she loves him still. What he did was terrible, but in the end, what happened before he did his crazy event was that his wife was just worried. She wasn't angry. And that is how she left this world. His children, his wife, they are still waiting. But it's up to Grader. Does he feel done? Can he be set free and help put them at peace? Or will he stay? Granted, if he does stay, Ranger Jensen has a new understanding, believe you me. Well, Grader wept some more, the sobbing, the stutter in his voice, and his tears hitting the ground. Those sounds just surrounded us. And this went on for a while. But then he reached out. He reached out to Ryder. She had some things prepared. She ended up lighting this candle, and she threw up this white dust that she had. But then she took Grader's hand. And really, none of the rest of us existed at this point as they walked off into the trees. It was about an hour later when Ryder came back. And I mean, we've just been there. You know, we're too afraid to disrupt anything if we moved. We didn't do anything. But she comes back and she's crying a small bit, but she's smiling too. And she walks up to Jensen, takes his hands in hers, and tells him that Mr. Jonathan Grader, the man of legend, did his crime. He's done his penance. And now he's been freed. He has now been reunited with his wife and children. And it was the most amazing, real thing that she's ever seen. And I mean, at that moment, you know, wow, that was it. It was done. I mean, was he really gone? Well, Ryder assures us that he is, or tries to. Ranger Jensen even said that as he took in a breath and looked around, he'd swear there was a new calm in the forest. It was well into the night at this point. We all took a moment by those family graves and one last moment at Jonathan's, and then it was done. Back at the cabin, we all wanted to know more about what Harley learned, and of course, everyone wanted to know more about what happened to me. It was quite the experience, I can tell you that. But it did what Grader wanted it to do. It's a very confusing, conflicting event. He got confused, created a very catastrophic event. Was his penance enough? What he did for me was show me I was on the right path. It showed me I should and could keep going. And this was a job from a while ago. You know, my jobs have changed a bit since then. But at that time, suddenly things seemed to come together and make sense in a whole new way. And as you'll hear me say, when it fits, whole thing was pretty amazing. And that was the job, dealing with a legend, dealing with fears, a man who made a monumental mistake, did a horrific thing, but then found a way to pay his dues and do what he could to make things right, to help, as they say, pay it forward. He learned his lesson, and in the end, what I took, aside from the fact that it was the most bizarre experience living out my own life and then coming back and doing it a different way, was that before you get overwhelmed because you think you're missing out on something, or if you get a sudden thought that everything is just all wrong and you feel that fear, you don't need to do what Grader did. It obviously was his biggest regret, and we're talking decades. It haunted him as he tried to make it right. Just remember, we do make bad choices at times. It should most definitely be addressed. But sometimes, even if we feel scared, our choices might be good and they might be the right choices. Basically, if you're having doubts about your doubts, maybe you should just take a breather and look at it all again. It hasn't been 10 years since we worked with Ranger Jensen, but unlike most clients, I do check in with him time to time, and he always says the same thing. Something's been lifted. He's going to keep his post and hold out. And when the 10-year mark hits, we will be the first to know how it goes. I hope you enjoyed the account of this job. Be sure to check back for more, subscribe, and remember, it's the weekend story. It'll be available on Friday, so you can tune in that day or any time over the weekend. Love to see you guys out there. Thanks for listening, and until next time, and I will talk to you all soon. And okay, that's a wrap. See y'all next time.